Hello and welcome to the Adastra podcast. My name's Mark Cahoot, and I lead the North American governance practice at Adastra, a global data, AI, and cloud systems integrator. We're coming to you today from Atlanta at the occasion of FabCon 2026. And joining me today in our Atlanta studio is Brad Friels, Azure Data and AI Specialist at Microsoft. In his role, Brad works closely with executive teams to help organizations align Microsoft's cloud, data, and AI capabilities with their strategic goals. He acts as a strategic advisor, orchestrating complex engagements, facilitating workshops to drive the client's alignment and readiness, and ensures that customers have the right technical, commercial, and operational support that they need to succeed. Brad, welcome to our podcast. You and I have worked together a few times on partner projects, on client projects, partnering successfully. Great thing about things like FabCon is that they give us a chance to meet in person.
Actually, so we meet.
Great to see you here. Yeah. And thank you so much for taking the time
Absolutely.
To join us.
Absolutely, looking forward to it.
Let's start a little bit with the man behind the role. What's your background, Brad, and what was your path to your current role at Microsoft?
Sure. Well, I'll start. I went to University of Texas, Hook'em Horns, any Longhorn fans out there. I started as a business major, and there's a street in Sixth Street called Sixth Street. Think of it as like a Bourbon Street for college kids.
Nice.
I found that. Didn't do so well in my business major, and decided to switch to become a math major. And my goal was to be a math teacher and coach basketball. And I was all excited about it. My mom was a high school teacher for 20 plus years. I came home and I told her, you know, I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. And she was like, I'm so excited for you. You're going to be great at it. And then she uttered one sentence that changed my life. And that is, but with your tastes, Brad, you won't survive on a teacher's salary. So don't do it.
Funny how that works. Yeah.
So I switched. I stayed a math major, but then I started programming computers. I've been programming computers since I was in middle school, and then took the technical path and joined Microsoft in 2001 as a technical resource, helping sellers talk and educate customers about technology, and was there from 01 to 2012. And then I got into sales, and everybody always asks, well, if you were a technical guy, why'd you get into sales? And the story there is I was covering SharePoint and search as an expert in those technologies. And it was when SharePoint just really exploded. And so we blew out our number, had a great year. I, as a technical seller, bought a new TV and hung it on my wall, and it was great. And then the sales guy I supported came to pick me up in a new car the next day. And I was like,
ouch.
TV or car? So let's go with car. So ended up doing about 10 years in the startup world, doing some AI based companies and stuff like that. And then I rejoined Microsoft about 4.5 years ago or so as a data and AI specialist. So
Right. That's
what got me to sitting here talking to you.
So let's see what that background, the Cartesian thinking, the music, all stuff around that, the basketball. Let's talk about Europe. Approach to your job, and specifically, let's start at the top, dealing with executive teams and connecting them to Microsoft's cloud and AI capabilities and connecting that to their broader business strategy. How do you go about it? How do you do it?
Yeah, it's the number one question we always get asked, you know, how do I do AI? Would say, how do I get value out of AI and things like that? And I found the biggest success is meeting the customer where they're at.
Right.
So you're going to have customers in varying degrees of this AI journey. You've got some that are fearful and scared, and you have some that are going 90 miles an hour down the runway, right?
So you've got the overwhelmed, and you've got those that
exactly.
See clear.
Yeah. So my first instinct is to just find out more about them, where they're at, why are they asking about AI? Are they doing it? What kind of information, you know, do they have peers that are doing things, or is it coming from inside? Is it coming from external? And so just understanding all of that context, so then I know how to guide them. And so, for instance, if they're fearful of AI and I start talking to them about 10,000 agents that they can go deploy in the next 2 weeks, it's not going to connect, right? So
Right. You
kind of have to walk them through where they're at step by step. And so that's my general approach, is find out where they are and then give them the education they need for what's the next step, and helping them paint kind of that long-term vision and journey to get there.
Almost like being a business consultant and really understanding operations, strategies, goals, and the idiosyncrasies of every company.
Absolutely.
And figuring out how to tailor.
Yeah, and it's almost just as important to tell them where not to use AI. Because I'll find some people, you know, AI is a hammer and everything's a nail. And, you know, that's not always the case. So,
yeah,
you know, helping them understand where to apply it, where not to apply it sometimes is more important than actually where to apply it. So
if you will, it's a form of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe sketching out what good looks like kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Envisioning the future. And then do I start with left foot or right foot and moving on this 1,000-step journey, perhaps?
Yes.
One of the themes about Microsoft's operating model that keeps coming up as I speak to Microsoft, to senior Microsoft leaders, is the role of partners in your ecosystem. Could you tell us a bit how, in your experience, partners amplify the value of Azure services, data and AI, infra, et cetera, for their customers?
Yeah, we couldn't survive without partners. I mean, we can't scale to meet our customers' demands, and so we rely on partners to help fill that gap. And the way that I like to talk to customers about partners is when I am educating customers and I bring my technical people in to educate them, we do it from a best practice perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is how the product group has said the best way to use the service or the product or things like that. What I'm not able to do very eloquently because I don't have enough time spent with the customer is, how do you take that best practice and translate it into your environment?
Right.
Right? So the way that I position partners is, rather than you stumbling your way through figuring out how to take this best practice and implement it in your environment, a partner can come in. They know our best practices inside and out, because that's all y'all do. And then they learn the customer's environment and they're able to make that translation. And what that turns into is time to value just gets compressed immensely. Because if the customer tries to do it on their own, they run into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. And then they might have to set up a meeting with me, but we can't meet with them for 3 or 4 days. And so it takes a lot longer to get to the value that they're expecting. And so that's how I like to position partners, is they help compress that time to value and make sure that it's implemented correctly in their environment with their security and governance and retention policies and all that kind of stuff in place.
So the role of partners really is bridging best practices per Microsoft to the client's world.
Absolutely.
Bringing knowledge of their needs to the table by spending more time with them, deeper engagement, et cetera, over time, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stay with that time dimension. How does the role of partners evolve as Azure data and AI adoption grows, as the ecosystem evolves? I suppose what I'm curious about is, what excites you about the future of the the Azure ecosystem?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing that I find right now, and I was walking around the conference talking to some different customers, and the common theme is everything is changing so fast. The customers are in the power and lights business a lot of time, meaning the people that I work with in the IT department are just trying to keep the powers and lights on all the time.
Right.
Much less keep up with the latest model that got released last week with the new features, and then comparing that model to other models and things like that.
It's whiplash.
And they can't keep it up.
Yeah.
Well, that's y'all's specialty. That's what our partners do. And so when I think about going forward, I think the role of the partner is going to be even more important going forward, because our customers aren't going to be able to keep up with all those changes. So when y'all bring in that expertise and that knowledge, you're able to transfer it to them so that they know, hey, I have confidence that we're using the right technology for the right problem.
Sounds like building alignment through clarity kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's start with what's often the beginning, I find, data readiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's fitness for purpose and like just having usable data. So for companies listening today that are thinking about leveraging Azure to drive transformation, data-driven decision-making and competitive insights, what would be your top piece of advice, or maybe a strategic action, for clients who want to accelerate their journey?
Yeah, that's a this is a very common discussion I have with customers. Yeah. And what I typically hear is, well, my data is not ready, or I need to clean my data, or I need to get it in the right format, or I need to do this or that. And what ends up happening is that just delays everything. And what they don't realize is there's ways that AI can come in and help with that scenario. So my number one message is don't wait. Dive in. Now, do it responsibly. Don't do it carelessly, but dive in and really start understanding, you know, what can we do with the data we have and the shape it's in right now?
Right.
And the reason I say that is because I promise you, your competitors are doing that. And if your competitors get that advanced capability before you do, you're behind the curve.
I hear you.
So don't wait. I mean, that's the biggest thing I can say is, you know, fail fast, figure it out, do it in a responsible, responsible way.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when you do fail, it doesn't release all the data into the world or anything like that. But there's ways to do it and get up and running a lot quicker than most of them think.
You know, one of the themes I've been hearing, Brad, at FabCon this week about, you know, where do I get started is sort of the possibility that Fabric offers, for example, mm-hmm. a platform like Fabric offers. And that's kind of a fresh start because it brings together yes. all the functionalities needed to control, work with, and prepare that data. So even if you don't have the necessary controls in your place in legacy systems, data sources, what have you, this gives you an opportunity for a fresh start. So I think that enables what you're saying,
correct,
just getting
yeah.
going without dealing with the whole technical debt you might be facing, et
absolutely, cetera. Yeah. And I would take it a step further. And if you talk specifically about Fabric, since we're at FabricCon, what I typically encourage customers to do is they've already got reporting somewhere, somehow. It could be in SQL, it could be in Azure already in some other format or, yeah. you know, somewhere, but they've already got that kind of capability somewhere in their company. So when you're starting off in Fabric, there's a Fabric trial, 60 days, no cost, stand it up, implement one of those reports in Fabric, connect to a data source or two, and walk through the transformation, the building of a report, the deployment of the report. Keep it super simple, keep it, you know, time boxed, and don't let your requirements get out of control. Then you can look at that and you can say, okay, how does that compare to what we have? Now, it's going to take longer because it's new technology. So don't look at it from a time perspective per se, but think about, okay, well, now if I need to bring on another data source, how long will that take?
Yeah.
Not as long. If I need to build another report, not as long. And so you can start to see the value slow and incrementally. Don't try to do the whole thing at once. Start off small and then build on top of it.
And maybe if you do it that way, one of these sort of transformational aha moments is, hey, I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Build up the confidence and the reassurance that you can do it securely, fast, and get value out of it.
Staying on that theme, learning by doing, et cetera, let's turn to the hot topic of the day, AI, of course, including yeah. LLMs and agentic
yep.
AI.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that overflow of information and the speed with which we're evolving. I think it would be interesting to hear, for those that are thinking about deploying AI to transform their businesses, let's ask that same question. What's the best way, in your view and experience, to get started and to dive in?
Yes. So I get this question a lot, right? We mentioned it earlier. And my feedback to every customer, so I have customers at varying degrees of the AI journey. I have some that aren't even doing it, barely yeah. even asking the question. I got people that are actually deploying it. The ones that have been the most successful, one of the things that I've seen them do that gives them that success, before they even start the AI journey, they implement an AI center of excellence.
Okay.
And it does several things. Let me kind of outline what I see it doing for companies. The first thing is, if it's done right, it's usually from an executive level down. And so with that executive level sponsorship of the COE, the Center of Excellence, what that's going to do is that's going to give direction to the company. Because, and I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of fear about AI. And the further down inside a company you go, the more the fear gets. And they're afraid it's going to take their job. It's going to make them look stupid. You know, they fear this change that's coming. So if you have the top level, kind of putting their approval on the adoption of AI, you start to build a culture of leaning into AI rather mm-hmm. than leaning away from AI. And so then you can start saying, how can AI help me? And so it starts to provide a culture of adoption and growth rather than the fear of change. So that's one kind of scenario that helps. Two other scenarios that help. Another one, technology choice. Let's just say you're a Microsoft shop. We're at Microsoft. I work for Microsoft. That's great. We'll do that. So that kind of predefines some of your technologies, but maybe you need more than that. And so this will help define what technologies you allow to be used for AI. So you don't have multiple different groups all doing their own
shadow AI.
Yeah,
if you
exactly.
will.
You got somebody over here doing one LLM, one over here doing a different one over here doing another one. This one's doing some offering in the cloud and you're all over the place, right? And then your governance becomes a nightmare. So it kind of helps in that arena. So that center of excellence there. And then the third big piece that I see is when AI projects kick off or when somebody has one that they want to investigate and use a use case, something like that, you've predefined in the center of excellence how to evaluate them. So a use case will come in and you're like, is this an AI project or not? That's the first question you have to ask. And if it is, great. Now then you have a process to evaluate, hey, what kind of AI do we need? Do we need something simple like a Copilot? Or do we need something complex like an AI Foundry to do this? Is it an LLM based or is it regression based? Or, so you have this workflow defining how AI can be implemented for the use cases that come in. So to kind of wrap it up, that COE really puts the guardrails in place for adopting AI, and then everybody starts to share that knowledge, and your knowledge, your experience, the value, what you get out of AI just starts to go through the roof when you do that.
If we think in OCM terms, I'm a governance guy, mm-hmm. right? And I spend my time thinking about the sort of just enough governance model, ways of putting in the people and process frameworks that enable this and that are, right-sized to every particular organization. And I find that one of the great benefits of what you're talking about, these COEs, is that it brings down the temperature a mm-hmm. lot. Working in a place of uncertainty,
yes.
where, change management is a big issue, and how are we going to roll this out? Just having that place to go, that go-to spot, that fount of knowledge and practices really enables people to get out of a bit of paralysis kind of thing and on their way.
Yeah.
I'd like to sequence the two agendas that we were just talking about, data and AI, marry mm-hmm. them a little bit together. Do you find that customers need to invest a great deal of time and effort in curating their entire data estate before moving to the solutions?
No, and it kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier. Don't wait. This stuff is just coming so fast, and the people that adopt it are going to get so much value out of this. And there's ways to adopt it in a very responsible manner, and don't wait. The data you have, AI is going to help you figure out what you have, what's good, what's not, and be able to curate that data with you, and you can help it. So it can pull it out. You can look at it. No, it's missing this. Great. Go back and get it. And get you to the point to where you have the data you need to provide the answers to whatever questions are needing to be answered.
I think that's a strong insight.
Yeah.
Don't wait. The competition's moving.
Someone's
going to eat your lunch.
Every hour.
kind of thing. So work where you're at with
yes.
what you have and build out from there. I wonder if you have any, just to make it come alive for our audience, do you have any examples of where you've seen that done well?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a customer I had, Heritage Grocery Group, and brought Adastra in to help on that project. It's a Hispanic grocery chain, and their planned growth strategy was to grow through acquisition.
Right.
And so, as you know, with any acquisition, the data is a mess, right?
Sometimes merger integration.
Yeah, everybody always thinks, oh yeah, we'll just merge the data together, and it doesn't work like that, right? Sometimes it never gets merged, and you always have, I know a customer had like 37 ERP systems, and it's just like, how do you even manage that? So since their strategy was to grow through acquisition, they wanted to find a way to onboard that data and bring it into their normal reporting procedure and policies in an expedient fashion. And so with the help of some of your AI accelerators, that's exactly what they did. You could use AI to get that data in and get it ready, only pull what you need and provide it to a centralized place so that they could do centralized reporting after the acquisition. So, it's absolutely real. It's absolutely doable. You just kind of have to have the policies and procedures in place to know that you can do it and have the guardrails and do it responsibly.
So it's not just theory. It actually works.
It actually works.
People are doing it.
People are doing it today, every day. Yes.
Hey, Brad, we're just about out of time. Let me just throw you one last question to close. And I think it comes back to the beginning of your career and where you are today. Looking back so far as you've gone along the way, what are a few key experiences or a key experience that shaped the way that you've dialed into customer engagements today?
Yeah, and I don't think there's one, but there is a skill that I would encourage everybody to have, especially in this day of massive change and rapid technology innovation and everything. Have curiosity. Just try to understand where people are, why are they doing what they're doing, understand their motivations, understand how they need help, and just be curious. Everybody's got a story. If you listen hard enough, there's always something to learn from somebody. And so I always walk into a customer. I never try to assume I know what they're doing. I just wait. I ask the questions. I see where they're at and then help kind of work with them, partner with them to make sure that I can educate them on what they need.
Brad Friels, staying curious, great lessons for business and great lessons for life, in my opinion. Thank you, Brad. We're
absolutely
just out of time
this
for
great.
This insightful and thoughtful conversation and opportunity to learn from you. I'm really taking away the messages of just get going with where you are today.
Don't wait
and roadmap it out a few years, but learn by doing. Think about centers of excellence as an organizational way to ground this. Build concentric circles as you go kind of thing in a controlled fashion. So it's been a pleasure, Brad. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
And to our audience, if you've enjoyed today's discussion, be sure to like and subscribe to this Ad Astra podcast series for more insights on data and AI business transformation. Until the next time, thank you for listening. And so long for now from Atlanta, FabCon 2026.